Doug the Jitterbug, just a silly lug. Young and wild with lots of style is Doug the Jitterbug, just a crazy mug, drinks liquor by the jug. He's alive with lots of jive, Doug the Jitterbug. They threw him out of school, cause all he learned was Tiger Ray. He never knew the golden rule, but boy, how he can shake. Doug the Jitterbug cuts a wicked rug. It ain't no shame, he's not to blame, he's Doug the Jitterbug. To be a lawyer, but he never got a case. Every time they'd look for that cat in court, he'd be doing the panty waist. And still a talk about a Doug the Jitterbug cuts a wicked rug. It ain't no shame, he's not to blame, he's Doug the Jitterbug.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now for the next hour, our public affairs show, local news and alternative views, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views here from WHFR.fm, WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford Community College. Last week, classes here. This is called the final exam week for the fall semester of 2008. The buildings will be open next week, though, and a couple of days into the week after that for people that might want to consider registering or even getting admitted and then registering for the winter semester. And that would be an exciting thing, of course. If you want to do it. What a way to spend your 3 or 4 months of the winter is actually improving your mind and your job skills. Everybody needs to consider that. Joining me in the studio today is Ned Apigian, Dearborn Heights resident and several times candidate for the Dearborn Heights City Council. And this is the mic check time, Ned. Let's see if we can hear you. So say hello.
I'm here.
There we go. He's there. We were comparing notes as to exactly who has the more information about the auto bailout status, because things are happening probably as we speak, or they should be happening anyway. So let me sum up for you what came from New York Times and was on the WDET Detroit Today show just 2 hours ago. And that is that although the bailout, as Ned's Detroit Free Press from this morning clearly says, collapsed in the U.S. Senate, mainly due to the rescue collapse, Detroit News, okay, mainly because the Senate Republicans wouldn't go for it, even though President Bush had negotiated with Democrats, and they had a plan, and he was agreeing to sign it, obviously, and they didn't go for it. It was only a small fraction of what the automakers said they wanted. $34 billion was what they said just a week or so ago. This was like $14 or $15 billion just to get them through, let's say, January, so that they wouldn't have to go bankrupt, start liquidating, and other bad consequences for folks. The situation is, and I heard this on WDET this morning live, Ron Gettelsfinger, who was the head of the UAW in the United States of America, United Auto Workers, he wasn't as articulate in the hearings in the last month in Congress, I didn't think.
That's but not he was his forte.
No. Maybe. No, he was extremely mad this morning because the Senate Republicans were blaming him and the UAW for the fact the bailout didn't happen, and he was not yelling yelling out names and epithets and so on, but he gave in about 20-minute address, and I wish I was trying to download it and play it back for you. It might be archived at WDET. .org or WDETFM.org, because they always archive their public affairs show, Detroit Today.
I'm sure it'll be repeated all over the world today, tonight.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I see this even from the Sunday Times last December 7th, okay. Can the UAW be taken seriously? A Paul Kersey and... Well, probably be nice to figure out who the heck he is. He thinks that, they're so overpaid. Of course, as I've said in this show before, Kersey is the director of labor policy at the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, a research and educational institute based in Midland. Right. They are a hyper-conservative think tank, folks. When you say think tank, they only think one way. Yeah, Hoekstra?
He's in charge of it because I got his mail about it the other day.
Yeah.
To give a donation to it.
Well, yeah, of course. They're,
I don't know where he found me. But.
I guess they are a nonprofit because they're a think tank. But believe me, they're not a true think tank when they can only think in one direction. Isn't it amazing that all of their research, so-called, always reinforces one point of view, and that is conservative and usually Republican point of view. Can the UAW be taken seriously, Paul? Absolutely, they can be taken seriously. My dad worked for Chrysler Corporation all his life. I was there in the organizing, although just an assembly line worker from the 1930s through the 1960s. And as a family, I knew about the sacrifices we had to make to get a union in place. And to get some fairness and equity and to adjudicate grievances when you have one. I mean, even if there's a problem and there's no union, well, forget it. You can either continue working for us and suffer or get out. I mean, that's been the case. If you know anything about the history of labor unions for the last almost 200 years, starting in Europe, you know that there's no answer for workers if the employers control everything other than a labor union. And we can carp about how labor unions in some situations were either good or bad for the industry or the employer. But everybody knows that the car companies haven't been on the right track here in Michigan for the last 15 years, approximately, since the 90s. They could have done a lot more against foreign competition, certainly. But I encourage you, I guess, to listen to the archive at WDETFM.org of the Detroit Today Show. I know the Gettelfinger was a press conference this morning. It's part of their show, and you can listen through your computers that way for that. What the situation is that may be resolved before we get done with this, but probably not, they'll probably draw it out longer, is that...
Paulson, the
right.
Treasurer.
Yeah. Here, I'll read the, this is from 10:37 this morning from New York Times. It's their current story on their website, too, about this issue. President Bush and the Treasury Department signaled on Friday morning, that is today, which is, December 12th. They stood ready to use some of the $700 billion bailout program for financial institutions for the big three car makers after last night, Republican senators refused to support a compromise proposal to rescue the automakers. Dana Perino, Mr. Bush's spokeswoman, public relations head. Right. She said, under normal economic conditions, we would prefer that markets determine the ultimate fate of private firms. Under normal economic conditions.
Unless you're a bank.
Mm-hmm. Well, right. Yeah, okay. Because that's not normal situation either. And then she went on to say, however, given the current weakened state of the U.S. economy, weakened. We're only weakened? Anyway, we will consider other options if necessary, including the use of the so-called TARP money. I say so-called because it's that $700 billion, folks, to prevent a collapse of troubled automakers. The Treasury Department promptly indicated it would provide short-term relief to the automakers. And that came out this morning during Gettelfinger's address, in fact, that they would do it. It just the details aren't there, and whether or not there's going to be too many strings attached, or whether or not they're going to appoint this car czar, which, again, it struck John Stewart on The Daily Show last night as strange. The last czar in history, as Ned probably knows, was Tsar Nicholas II in Russia. and he was overthrown because he wasn't
the
man of the people.
Czar.
Yeah. And so the connotation in America of having anybody, even a nickname, calling him a czar, is not a good thing. Okay. It's not a positive thing at all. We don't need another dictator, another totalitarian leader. And no names, of course, am I going to mention about
anyone. Didn't we have
anyone
a drug czar
up there? Yeah, right. And that was stupid, too. So they're grabbing at straws there. But that. That temporary bailout just to get him to January 20th, and of course that's the magic time that Barack Obama officially takes office, and the Democratic majority in the Senate and the House are in place, and then of course they can pass whatever they want to pass at that time, which I'm sure will be reasonable, but I have a feeling it would, if they were in power right now, they wouldn't stop for a second to get at least the initial package.
Do you remember how the vote went yesterday with the two moderate Republicans from Maine?
No,
Olympia Snow, and
no, I don't know that. Yeah.
Because it's interesting to see whether they followed the majority.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Here is
they just won their elections,
so. Right? Yeah. And, well, there are such things, as Ned knows, as Southern Democrats, too, that Democrats in the South, coming from Alabama, Georgia, and so on, aren't necessarily in agreement with a lot of the social issues of Democrats up north and out west and Midwest, too. And several of these people, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, they've got foreign car makers in their state. And it seems like they're trying to be protectionist of the foreign car manufacturers.
With tax breaks.
Right. And VW just got a tax break to build a new factory. I believe it's in Alabama. And that was $500 million, $500 million, to VW for that factory. And, of course, it'll give jobs to the people in that area. But they certainly can't totally give money to the foreign auto companies that are building plants here, and nothing to our own people who need the money. And sure, they've been on the wrong track. They haven't been competitive. And I don't mean the UAW folks, because it's been pointed out, if you're listening carefully and you catch Gettelfinger's address, the UAW is at a parity in terms of dollars per hour. All of this ridiculous Fox News, Sean Hannity stuff about $70 an hour and $80 an hour, that all depends how you add benefits and perks and retirement to the basic hourly wage. In terms of hourly wages, folks, the UAW gets the same or less than Toyota and VW workers who don't have a union. Okay, now it's true that benefits like health insurance and retirement benefits and so on are greater if you're a member of the UAW and you're working under their contract, but they're willing to compromise it. But when you think, people say, oh, $70, $80 an hour, that's outrageous. I only make $12 an hour. Well, excuse me, but the auto workers at Toyota and Ford in their plants are making about $30 an hour, too.
I think it was $25 for Toyota and $27 for UAW. And it was about $3 difference.
Yeah.
As I saw recently.
Yeah, one I saw just this morning, it showed Toyota, maybe just one particular factory, there was like a buck more than the average UAW total. So it's not the UAW, folks. It's not the unions, despite what a few, and only a few, so if you're Republican, I'm not tearing down all Republicans, but a few Republicans in the Senate right now seem to really not know what they're talking about. And they just don't like unions for the whole principle of not liking unions, I guess.
Well, the front page on the Detroit News has a short explanation of senators to the UAW. It's payback time. And what the article says is, this is during the recent election, their political action committee pumped millions, almost $2 million this election cycle alone, to be exact, into the congressional campaign of Democrats, and only 12,000 into Republicans, according to OpenSecrets.org in the 1990 contract.
Yeah.
So they're out to get the UAW, and that's why they keep talking about it, whether it makes any historical sense or
it's
not.
It's a pragmatic dollar thing. Yeah.
They
it makes a philosophical sense, and typically Republicans have been known to support big business, that is the people that own the businesses and not the workers, because they've been anti-union. And again, I do not understand that anti-union stand. I guess everybody knows I'm a unionist because my dad was, and I was one here at Henry Ford Community College when I was full-time, too. We got a great union here, and we would have gotten the protection, that's what unions are really all about, as well as a stable pay rate without the union making our case in fair and open negotiations.
Guess where the new American manufacturers are located? In Kentucky, Tennessee, and in Alabama.
Yeah.
And those are the people that are making the objection. They're protecting their own economic base.
So we're going to wait to see whether it's today or Monday, whether or not, and it may not be George Bush, he may stay in the background, although couldn't he do something nice for somebody in his last month in office? Anyway, it looks like it'll be Henry Paulson that'll take the lead and just make a little statement that he'll take care of the money thing, that the $14 or $15 billion right now, and then pass the issue along. But that hasn't happened yet today, folks.
That proposal has $35 billion set aside for technological advancement. They could give that money and then compensate for it after the year.
Right.
In other words, replace it. That's all they have to do.
Right. That was that. It was $25 billion, but 25 or 30, that new technology money to the auto companies in U.S.-owned auto companies, that was in that additional $140 billion on top of the $700 billion for TARP.
I think it's part of the $700 billion.
No, there was $140 billion of extra giveaways in order to pass the TARP $700 billion. But it doesn't matter. It was there. You're right. And they could take from that, except that's not the reason that the money was set aside.
But it's only temporarily for 6 weeks, and they take it from later and put it back. It doesn't make any difference.
Since they're playing fast and loose with the $700 billion, or at least the first half of that, the $350 billion, with no strings attached, and Paulson can do anything he wants to do to bail out Citigroup, of course, started with AIG and all the others, that if there's no strings attached, what the heck? Let's just go ahead and do that. It's just a bridge loan, as they say. It's a loan, and it's a bridge to what? Well, whatever the Democrats with Barack Obama in the lead are going to decide to do at the end of January.
Why does a loan need to have the word bridge in front of it?
Because it's not enough by itself. It's a bridge loan in that...
Meaning it's temporary. It'll
take you into the next year, into the next administration. And you still got to pay it back. But it's not enough. Everybody knows it's not enough.
Of course, everybody knows the bank loans are not loans.
Right. They have not been. No, they've just money
given away. They're investments into bad paper.
If you will, So this is a difficult issue, folks, but that's the latest that we know. And the only way to be updated is, Ned, you were saying you called the Free Press or something to get an update and couldn't get through to anyone. But
I was talking to the UAW because I wanted to interview them today. Today's a busy day for them.
Oh, I bet.
They have this strange policy that only one person talks when there are 5,000 talk shows in the United States. You think they'd have 5,000 people talking in as many places as they could.
But they don't have as many lobbyists as the...
Obviously.
American Medical Association or the NRA or the even the NAB, National Association of Broadcasters.
But so. I did learn one thing today from them that I hadn't heard before. I was trying to get an explanation of the sub-pay issue that has to do with unemployment. And Toyota is furloughing their employees and that's at full pay.
Ah.
So
there's kind of
their point was that's no different than subpay. And subpay is that when you get laid off, they made the manufacturer compensate the difference between 85% of your take home.
Mm-hmm.
Like if your 85% of your take home was 1800, but your unemployment is 1000, the difference of $850 would be the subpay.
Mm-hmm.
And so that all depends on the formula of what plant you work at,
right,
how many people are there, what the dollar amounts are. Toyota, their comment was, is doing exactly the same thing.
Mm.
They're just calling it furloughing the employees with full
pay. Because they've got to cut back production a little bit since sales are down for everybody.
They could send them home with no pay. They don't have a union.
Yes.
That's what I would do if I was them.
Although I think, because there is a union, in other plants, that they have to stay somewhat competitive. If there was no UAW anywhere in the U.S., then there'd be no standard, and I think the manufacturer would be even more, I'm sorry I got to use the word cruel, to their employees than they are now.
But their chain of command, there's no union in Toyota at all.
No.
Unless they do have a joint venture with General Motors in California.
Well, that plant maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah. I know. Well, that's about all we can say on this at this point. Let me just go back for a second.
Apparently, this doesn't affect the Ford Motor Company as much as it affects GM quite majorly in Chrysler in a minor sense.
Yeah, Ford has said that
that's a local issue.
If GM
us.
And Chrysler go bankrupt, though, that the suppliers and the industry will be so crippled that they will be crippled too. Even though they've got technically money enough to hold them over, maybe for a year or so until their new products come on.
They can do the bridge until they don't need it as fast as the other two.
That's true. But as they said, if the other companies just sort of go out of business all of a sudden, then they can't survive either. It's because that they share suppliers and, that provide the parts, actually some of the parts. And, for example, some of the hybrid drivetrains in Ford Escapes actually come from Toyota. And that's embarrassing to have to admit that. But I remember, in fact, in the 90s, I had a Ford car, and I loved it. It was a Taurus, but it was a Taurus SHO.
Oh, the show.
The show.
And, made by Yamaha.
Yeah, the engine was made by Yamaha.
Right.
What an engine that was. Whoa, and it wasn't just a motorcycle engine, folks.
It was a hot V6.
Let me tell you, that was quite an experience. But there's nothing wrong with those kinds of, deals between the manufacturers if they're beneficial to them. They're obviously Toyota is getting some profit out of the sale of some of their hybrid parts to Ford, although Ford is not 100% Toyota hybrid. No, they have their own system, but some of the parts are from Toyota, I know. So there is that sharing, that interrelationship of the industry, and if the supply system goes down, especially if Chrysler and GM go down, then Ford has said that they will be badly hurt, and they may not survive then either. So there is terrible consequences here.
A lot of this has nothing to do with the auto business in itself. It's not a matter of the unions. It's not a matter of suppliers. No. It is a matter that a double tsunami hit the economy.
Mm-hmm.
If you are not sure whether you have a job or whether you're going to keep your job, you're not about to go buy a new car. And that's not the fault of the manufacturers.
No.
If you cannot get a loan and you want to purchase a car, all these things are strikes against the companies that have actually nothing to do whether a UAW gets subpay or whether Toyota gets furloughs. No. There is a double tsunami happening here that has nothing to do with anything.
And I guess my final comment on this, I'll remember all the opinions expressed on this show, Ned's, mine, and the ones that we're reading and playing back for you on the show, are not necessarily opinions of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College, not faculty, staff, students, administrators, or anyone else. We're just, saying what we know from the research we've done. And we've got a lot of newspapers stacked in front of us here that we've read, believe it or not.
You want to know another interesting thing that has not how this affects?
Okay.
GM will rethink sponsoring the NASCAR Now, imagine that. What does that have to do with anything? Imagine the ripple effect of that.
That was a publicity thing. They already ended the Buick sponsorship by Tiger Woods, which is $7.5 million, that he's not going to be their endorser,
people want to understand the ripple effect of this, and this is unbelievable how the ripple effect will go through the system.
Yep. All these other things that the auto industry does that connect and so on. Mayor O'Reilly, other mayors were in Washington, D.C. I know specifically on Tuesday he may still be there. I didn't get a chance to call his office today. He was there advocating federal support of Ford Motor Company and the U.S. car industry in Washington this week as part of an initiative organized by the newly formed Mayors Automotive Coalition. He will join other mayors. He did join other mayors, meeting with congressional leaders and officials from President-elect Barack Obama's transition team on Tuesday. And their push coincides with the congressional vote. So,
guess where they're talking about? Lansing, Livonia, Sterling Heights, mm-hmm. Warren, Wixom,
that's right.
Toledo, and Arlington, Texas.
Yeah, I don't
I wonder why that is. There's a GM plant in Arlington.
Well,
Texas.
That's it then, yeah.
And their Republican congressman for the deal.
We know Toledo has the Chrysler Jeep plant.
Right.
So Shreveport, Louisiana, I don't remember offhand, but nice to see those mayors getting together. And we know that at least somewhere I read that O'Reilly did get on one of the national news channels, too, for a brief soundbite. But, just like Mayor Guido did, we need to go to Washington sometimes to plead our case for the manufacturers as well as the people of Dearborn, and good for him in getting down there and doing what he could. Obviously, it wasn't successful in terms of legislative effort, but, as long as Republicans got that majority there, they, even going against George Bush, of course, there was good reasons for that over several issues in the last 8 years, but even
they
going
didn't
against
do it.
Bush has apparently no power whatsoever to even influence his own Republican leadership, the so-called Republican caucus in the Senate. But many Republicans did side with this bailout. I don't know which ones locally, but so we're going to have to wait and see. Keep our fingers crossed.
Thaddeus McCotter did. I saw him on television.
Yep.
Did a pretty good job, too, as I remember.
Okay. Just sad. Let us turn to Jim Hightower here. He's got a one of his commentaries. Hightower is a syndicated columnist. I have his print column, which is not carried in either one of our local papers, but he just started making this available. And this is from a couple days ago, so it's almost old news. But
where's he from?
Texas. Austin, Texas. Yeah. In fact, when Ralph Nader, as we know, our independent candidate for president for the last several elections, when he was considering whether or not he would run, he said, well, if I don't run, you should ask Jim Hightower. Well, again, Hightower is not a politician in the sense of knowing how to wheel and deal, and he doesn't physically know as much as Ralph Nader about how government works and all the laws and legalities. Nader, a lawyer, of course, and but he's a progressive, which means a liberal, and he is a man of the people, and he's got a couple great books out. So Jim Hightower, but you can go to jimhightower.com if you want to look these things up.
We lost Molly last year, wasn't it? What was her last name?
Yeah, Molly Ivins. She was from Texas also.
Texas.
Just to give you an idea of what he said at the beginning, and this is available on his website, this is his print syndicated column, which could be carried in the Press and Guide or the Times Herald locally, but they probably have to pay money out, so they've chosen not to do that. But anyway, Congress coddles bankers while bashing auto workers. Sound familiar? Senator Bob Corker is, he says, is Jim Hightower's words, a real corker. The Tennessee Republican is on the Senate Banking Committee that's overseeing the bailout of America's big three automakers, and by gollies, it's a Texas thing, I guess, he got his dander up when the three CEOs told the committee last week that they needed a $34 billion loan to survive. No way, popped the corker. Bad metaphor there. unless and until you cut jobs and slash the pay of your union workers.
Right. Corkers, he mentioned the jobs bank in his thing, too.
Before we even contemplate making a loan to these companies, he said, as corker, we need to put in place specific and rigorous measures. Hightower says, wow, what a tough guy. But why pounce on Detroit when he and his colleagues so meekly gave up $700 billion of our money to Wall Street hucksters? Okay, the numbskull auto bosses goobered by flying to Washington in their separate but equal corporate jets, failing to grasp the optics, corporate speak for bad image, of pampered CEOs jetting in for a taxpayer bailout. But wait, the honchos of Citigroup, AIG et al., have also been jetting in and out of Washington for their gimmies, yet Corker and Company raised no hue and cry, nor did they impose any rigorous measures as a condition of Wall Streeters getting taxpayer cash. Indeed, the total bailout of the financial barons, counting loans, stock purchases, guarantees, and backdoor handouts by the Treasury and Federal Reserve, is nearly $8 trillion. That's his words, his assessment. If you add it all up, folks, it's not the $700 billion, it's $8 trillion. Did I say 800? It's $8 trillion. It's just $8 trillion, but that's a lot more than...
They didn't even have to walk to Washington. They didn't have to go anywhere. They just sent them the money without asking.
Right. I don't think they've even had to fly in that much. Yes, that's eight, followed by 12 zeros. Amazingly, though, the beneficiaries of this phenomenal taxpayer largesse do not have to provide any public benefit in exchange, and Congress isn't even being told where most of the money has gone. So I'm not going to read the rest of it, but that's Jim Hightower, and I'd like to present his opinion here. It's entitled Sign of the Times. He does pre-record some of these two-minute things, and it's at his website a couple times a week, almost every day, and so we'll listen to that, and then something about the WHFR holiday store, so it's not too late, as they say, if you have any money at all left. So here's Hightower and our own little promotional announcement for you. We'll be back with more of the new WHFR Journal, WHFR.fm. We're making waves.
Economists, myopically poring over reams of data, have finally noticed that our economy is in a recession. If only they'd looked around, they could have seen less abstract indicators showing that the economy has long been in a heap of hurt. For example, abandoned boats. Along rivers, coves, and other waterfronts around the country, there are reports that thousands of vessels are being ditched by their owners. These are not junkers, but everything from pleasure boats to commercial fishing rigs that have simply become too expensive for the hard-hit owners to maintain. With no one in the market for buying used craft, which also have very little in scrap value, the owners slip them into a marina or onto a beach, remove the ID numbers, and walk away. Another sign of the times can be seen at the very top of America's financial pyramid, where the party seems to be over. At least it is for Marc Jacobs, the high society designer in New York City who throws an annual holiday bash for a few hundred of his closest friends. Last year, for example, some 800 swells came to Jacob's gala dressed in Arabian Nights costumes. They were bedazzled by bare-chested women draped with golden necklaces, lavish food and drink, and, at a climactic moment in the evening, by a shower of golden glitter falling over them. Those were the days, huh? This year, however, instead of an invitation, guests received a terse email saying, "Due to the financial climate, I had to make the decision to cancel the 2008 holiday party." The glitter is gone from the Gilded Age. This is Jim Hightower saying, folks at the bottom are used to hearing hard times knock on their doors, but when the gates of opulence also get a knock, you know that something different is taking place in this downturn. As one marketer of luxury goods recently observed, we're just seeing the very beginning of this.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current. Even a dead fish can go with the flow. Now available wherever books are sold.
The holiday season is officially here, and WHFR would like to remind our listeners that the WHFR online store is open 24 hours a day to help you with your holiday shopping. If you or someone you know loves WHFR, we can't think of a better gift for them than one of our quality WHFR logo products. Choose from items such as t-shirts, sweatshirts, hats, coffee mugs, and much more. Some items on the site now feature our new limited edition logo, expressing your support for non-commercial independent media. These items will only be available for a limited time, so check out our online store today by visiting www.whfr.myshirtdesigner.com. Remember, every purchase from our online store helps us continue making waves. Thanks in advance for your support, and from our family to yours, have a great holiday season.
Hi, we're back with WHFR's Public Affairs Show, the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views. We try with our music, you know, on the station to present things that you don't hear on other stations. And the same thing with our local news. Some people have said, you know, well, you're not totally objective. Well, no one can be totally objective, first of all. But secondly, we tried to present things that maybe you hadn't heard yet or hadn't heard the particular spin on. One of the things locally, we're going to leave the bailout aside. We wish the best for everybody that's working hard to help our automakers. We do think the consequences would be disastrous if something isn't done to support them. And it wouldn't be fair and equitable, even.
I guess it would affect us in Dearborn.
Hang on, Ned. Go ahead, Ned.
I guess it'll affect us in Dearborn. It's local enough.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but all around the country. So we're going to look at the press and guide from Wednesday, December 10th. And it does have the specifics about Mayor O'Reilly touting auto aid on cable shows. And so that's fine. We mentioned that already. There's an interesting story is that Candace Ewing
Abbott
has withdrawn her recount request on the race of last November's election for Dearborn 19th District Court Justice. Okay, now it was something like 228 votes difference.
Right.
And incumbent Judge Summers did win by 228 votes. And
out of 34,000.
Right. And because Candace thought there was some irregularities in East Dearborn voting, she wanted to say a few things. And I don't have the story with me here, but I thought it was interesting. It was actually a story in one of the two papers about the city clerk's office. And one of the issues was, and I think this was, it may have been what Candace Abbott was referring to, that there was a school where people were voting that Arab American groups supposedly had put pamphlets inside of them, just piled them up too near the polling place that were, in fact...
within the 100 feet of the polling place?
Right, that were, in fact, in favor of Summers and not Abbott. And when Kathleen Buda, who is our city clerk, went over there to talk about this, and if I'm getting the facts all messed up, I apologize, but she reported that she was confronted by people there who were, I guess, responsible for these things and said, I don't have to do anything you say. And it was got rather ugly. And this is our Dearborn city clerk just trying to follow the rules about campaign literature distribution and procedures. Mm. And it looks like it's all been dropped, though, now. And because if Abbott, if that was part of the issue that they thought there was undue influence or something, because those pamphlets were distributed too close to the place, whether or not Buddha was confronted or not, which also shouldn't happen in our free society. But here's the story, anyway, and just thought it was worthwhile trying to figure out why she backed off after she said for 3 weeks she's going to ask for a recount.
A full recount of all 58 precincts.
Right, yeah. In an email sent to the Press and Guide this last Monday night, Abbott said she requested that certain precincts be recounted.
Because?
Yeah, the page is turning on the air. Pregnant pause here. Because first, which they were. By the end of the day Monday, it appeared that the voting tabulation was in order. I don't know who was going over that, a clerk's office, and about half of the precincts were recounted. So they had been recounted. I don't know if that was part of her official request or whatever. Anyway, had she not withdrawn, the recount would have continued for another day and a half, Abbott said. A full recount of ballots from all of Dearborn's 58 precincts would have cost Abbott, and this is what I said 2 weeks ago, a 25-year attorney, $580, $10 per precinct.
That's not much.
No, considering the cost of all of the mailings that she had to all the people of Dearborn, it must have been $40,000, $50,000, and that's a not a crazy estimate, folks, although certainly supporters of hers paid for that, not she personally necessarily.
Right.
I know some of the supporters that probably paid for that, but of course I can't see on the air. Anyway, Dearborn City Clerk Kathleen Buda said Tuesday that the cost that the city would incur would be zero, after speaking with an official from the Michigan Bureau of Elections on Monday. She said that she was told that since the recount would be run by the state, Wayne County, who hires the canvassing board to conduct the recount, would be liable for all the expenses in this case. So if she would have gone on, then she would have had to pay the $580, and it looked like a losing cause. I guess she saw there weren't any irregularities, at least among half the precincts there.
Do you know how many billboards she had? Those billboards cost over...
That too, yeah.
And you can't buy one, usually. You got to buy three or four or five or six.
I'm sure that all together was one of the most expensive campaigns done locally, almost by any candidate. So close vote spurs recount attempt. Just so you know, Summers garnered 50.17% of the votes, and Abbott was at 49.5. But the number of discussions centering on three discrimination lawsuits Summers has been facing have not been resolved yet, and that was a factor in some of the controversy there.
Abbott's she's saying, accusing other people of discrimination against
her. Well, she's saying that because he even had a lawsuit filed against him, because she didn't, you know, the lawsuit hasn't been decided whether he's guilty or not, that must mean that he's not qualified for office as a judge. And he had endorsements from the Republican Party in Dearborn, the Democratic Party in Dearborn, and a whole bunch of other lawyers and legal organizations in the Detroit area that said he was well qualified for this office. And so she didn't have much of a case to make, but had a lot of money behind her.
She certainly outspent him, that's for sure.
Yes.
4-1 anyway.
Right. And Summers, pretty much an independent candidate, even at the outset, he didn't ask for or demand either Democrat or Republican Party money support. I know it's a nonpartisan race, but sometimes the parties chip in, you know, if somebody seems amenable to their political strategies. But he didn't accept that before, and so I think as most of his own money. Well, last time I talked to him, I think he was indicating he had to spend between $20,000 and $30,000, and so she outspent him at least 2-1. She and her campaign, wherever the money came from. Well, I wanted to look at also on the front page of the Press and Guide this Wednesday that Dearborn schools are up for a couple of changes. The budget is being worked on, and as I reported on this show, there might be actually a cutback in state funding to all the schools. That's universities, Henry Ford Community College and other community colleges, as well as the K-12 systems, the public educational facilities, because the state is out of money again. Because of the bad economy and people aren't, they're not collecting sales taxes, they're not collecting as many, and income is down, so the income tax revenue, they can guess, by next April anyway, will be down. And
property tax is the big issue.
Yes,
for schools.
Right. If in any sort of reassessment situation, the assessment of the market value of the house sets the price of the taxes. Now, it's a couple years behind in terms of, but that's going to go down too in terms of revenues coming in. So tough times for the state, and we said that before, but for the next year, budget year, starting July 1, 2009, in Dearborn, the Dearborn Public School District is already in the planning process for that budget. District officials are projecting expenses will exceed revenue by $10.5 million. That's right. Therefore, DPS officials are working on plans to make reductions totaling $11 million. It says we need to aim a bit higher, that extra $500,000.
Of course, you have rounded off.
Knowing that the numbers may change a bit, and as we get into the details of where the reductions will be made, actual figures will probably be less. That's according to DPS Communications Coordinator David Mustonen, a former student of mine in the telecom program here. And he is still out there in telecom-related field. Anyway, always
can they do that to the budget after it's been started in that year?
The state of Michigan tells you how much money you're going to get over the next year, but they pay it out in monthly payments to the school districts. If things are bad, they have the right to say, oh, sorry, we can't give you what we said.
We'll miss the last payment.
Yeah, or several. Yeah.
Or parts of several.
I'm old enough to remember that a couple of times they missed four payments out of the 12 promised for Henry Ford Community College and other schools. And that was devastating. I mean, you already made a capital improvement. You know, okay, let's improve the building, electricity or the parking lot or something.
That's what I mean. Now it's time to pay for it.
And you're stuck with that. And then there's no money coming from the state all of a sudden. So that hurts more, I think, to cut and to hold back money during a budget year.
For capital improvements, for sure.
For anything. Well, capital improvement is such a large amount. And once you start it, you can't get out of it. You know,
because you have contracts.
Well, you have a building has no heat because you didn't have money enough to finish putting in the new furnace or something. You know what I'm saying? Is that once you have these projects started, they've got to be finished or you're just going to have an even worse mess. So anyway, but no, we're talking here about the big budget, the full budget for 2009, starting in July 1st, 2009, going for another 12 months. Yeah, but where are they going to cut $11 million out of the Dearborn schools? I mean, in the east side, there's more students than ever. Going to school. West side is sort of the same or slightly declining in students. So we haven't lost any students. We can't close any buildings, you know. Were they going to fire more teachers? Yeah, that's always easy.
They're going to buy back the buildings they sold when things are on the
Well, but then line. They need more teachers too, so and more administrators. So who knows? But it's, the good news is, right next to it here, this is the article in the Press and Guy by Sean Delaney. This year, legislators are working together to solve budget problems for the schools. With Michigan's automotive industry in peril and Governor Jennifer Granholm expected to announce more than $120 million in budget cuts by the end of the year. That's by the end of this year. That's that cutbacks we talked about.
Uh-huh.
$120 million. The state's economic outlook is uncertain at best. And so,
how many days we have left for $120 million? Yeah, 2 weeks?
Maybe she'll announce it after Christmas. Don't want to lose the Christmas cheer spirit there. State lawmakers say, though, that despite the current economic crisis facing the state, the budget process for the 2008-2009 fiscal year has been remarkably smooth compared to last year's fiasco. Fiscal fiasco, they called it here. Working on the budget this year was a much more fluid process. I guess things just started flowing. That was Senator Tupac Hunter, not a hip-hop artist, who represents Northwest Detroit, Dearborn Heights, and Inkster. I'm sorry,
yeah,
it's disrespectful to Senator Hunter, but...
he's around us.
Yeah, yes, he is. Well, that's why they quartered him, of course.
Right.
And this continued on 10A, and so we're hoping that rather than the very partisan bickering that kept a state bailout, whether it was taxes or changing taxes around, we're hoping that we'll go more smoothly this year, that there will be resolution.
There was an election that complicates things.
Yep.
The election's over now, so they can solve problems.
Yep. A quote here from Representative Gino Polidori. He said the crisis, who's our Dearborn representative, to the Michigan House of Representatives. The crisis in 2007, he said, stemmed from many factors, including the repeal of the single business tax with no plan on how to replace that money. Since there was no new revenue stream in place, we had to cut back programs and allocations to local governments.
They had a couple of plans. They were lousy and they gave up on them.
Yeah. Polidori went on to say, I must congratulate our budget analyst in Lansing for providing realistic data on what we can expect in the way of tax revenue. This year's decisions were no easier than the previous year. However, knowing ahead what income we had to work with made the process less contentious and smoother. So, but we'll have to wait and see. But I think they got such bad press, all of them, that they may actually, the politicians that aren't term limited, and this is Gino Polidori's last term in office.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Because you can only do 3 in a row, 6 years,
right.
Then you're out.
That's right.
They throw you away. So, and as Gary Warrenchuk, who's now our Wayne County Commissioner from this area.
He doesn't want that job.
No, because he's not term limited. He's not term limited in Wayne County.
But and he became a Democrat.
I did an exit interview with Gary when he was leaving the Michigan House of Representatives. In his last 2 months, he came down here on this show, and he basically said, yeah, I'm just starting to figure out how it all works. I mean, he's not a dumb guy, but I mean, you know, who do you talk to, and how do you get the bills introduced, and who do you have to cajole or go to lunch with more than other people in terms of trying to make your point and getting bills passed that you're in favor of and for the good of your constituents, and that's certainly true. So
But it's not only those guys that are normal legislators. There were guys that are involved with budgets that were experts that had to leave. People like Warrenchuk that weren't involved in those specialized committees. The state lost the guys that really knew what they were talking about. I wonder whose idea that term limitation was to be so short was.
Well, the public voted for it, you know.
I mean, who wanted it?
You know, I mean, 8 years seemed too long, I guess, and 4 years seemed too short, so they picked six. The people of Michigan voted for it in order to get the so-called bastards, I think I can say that in the air, yeah, out of office, you know, so that you don't have cronyism and other problems with people that keep getting elected and reelected and reelected, that they either get lazy in their job or they have a lot of appointees that are constantly telling them good things or lying to them, and so and
8 years would have been a better
change is good. Maybe 8 years would have been better. Mayor Guido always said that you know, that we already have term limits and it's called elections. If you don't like someone, you go and vote. Of course, so few people vote, they want a way to automatically kick them out. But then who do you get? I mean, some of the people on C-SPAN, well, some of these Republicans that talked against the auto industry and others, they seem to be as dumb as a brick. And I can say that. They can't sue me because nobody has done an IQ test on a brick yet. But really, I mean, I'm talking about some Democrats as well as Republicans. If you watch C-SPAN and C-SPAN 2 and you watch some of the committee meetings and you know, these people are not very high in IQ, even though some of them are lawyers and rich. They're not very smart, but they get elected. Some people said they voted for George Bush for president because he's a man of the people. He's just like us. He's just as dumb. I'm sorry, just as uninformed as we are, and he doesn't like to read, and I don't like to read. And even though he was a college graduate, maybe, he was.
Yale, nonetheless. Yeah,
right, but he was only a C or a C-plus student, though, so it wasn't that he was a brilliant student. But he did get through Yale, of course.
He was a legacy person. That's how he got into it.
But he admitted he didn't like to read, he didn't like to study. So anti-intellectual is not the kind of person you want in office. I read somewhere that Barack Obama's IQ, and I don't know how they came up with this, because they don't usually do IQ tests when you're out of school.
I haven't heard that.
Is 124. Well, mine in high school, you know, you have an IQ assessment as part of the SAT, was 134. Okay, so I beat Barack by 10 points. But I'm not a mental genius. I haven't read and studied enough to be an economic expert. But there's, you know, intelligence is a matter of what you remember, but also the wisdom to use it and to apply that knowledge to solve problems. And although the IQ test doesn't, the traditional test doesn't necessarily say that. It's just sort of a test of how much stuff you know and can remember in the right time, in the right place to answer a question.
It's a question of attitude, as to when you are less ideological and able to listen to other people and say, you know what, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You don't say, I am the decider and I will decide based on my own limitations.
Implying that no matter what you say,
right,
I'm going to do it the way I want to do it, even, and I'm not really going to, I don't care what you say. And so that's the way it goes. By the way,
signing ceremonies give you a good insight into that.
Right.
I'll sign this bill, but I'll do what I want.
Superintendent Whiston in Dearborn here, and talking about these cutbacks, we'll finish the story with this. Cuts could come in a number of areas. The projected $11 million in cuts would come from six areas, according to Superintendent Whiston. He says $750,000, so almost $1 million, overspending in current budget, over planned spending. So they're going to cut about $1 million of planned spending on facilities and other things they need to buy. $1.8 million possible proration or per pupil allowance cuts over the next 2 years. I don't understand what that means.
How do they assess that?
They're going to cut back. I thought the state was the one that gave us money based on the rate per student.
Right.
Anyway, he also said that $5 million will be taken from step pay increases for employees. I knew they hit the workers. And what that means is, step pay is something that teacher contracts have. It's automatic pay increases, even if there's no percent of increase. And a lot of people maybe say, oh, I don't agree with that.
Based on
so, in other words, let's say you negotiate a new contract, and you get no increase in your pay amount in terms of percent of increase, whether it's cost of living or not. However, because you're a worker there already, you get your other step payment. Now, the steps can vary depending on your number of academic degrees.
Oh, I
but
see.
It's a couple thousand bucks extra every year.
The permanent steps.
It's like longevity pay or something, because you're there another year.
So you have a master's degree, so you're entitled.
Right. You get an extra $2,000 a year, whether there's a percent of increase or not.
I see.
And that's nice to have, you know. And in fact, I'm sure the public will say, wait a minute, you mean those couple of years when they took 0% in their contract, they still got raises? That's right. They got the step increase.
Well, it's based on if you've been here 4 years, you get so much. If you're here six years.
It's pretty fair up to maximum. It goes for about 8 to 10 years of employment, then it stops. You don't get any more step increases. So when you're at so-called maximum pay for your degree, this is true with the K-12. I know it's true here at Henry Ford Community College. Then you don't get any more step increases. So, but, you know, the pay to start with here at Henry Ford Community College for someone with a master's is below $40,000. And somebody said, well, I'd die for that. Well, get your master's degree and prove yourself as a teacher in a subject area we need and we'll consider you. You know, of course, teaching is a secure thing, but starting out in the 30,000 range, when you think of even the auto workers at Toyota and their hourly pay, multiply that times 40 a week, times 50 weeks or whatever, and that's a lot more than 30,000 a year right there. And so because teachers always, as you know, intelligent professionals that have a big, you know, a lot of academic degrees, they always start lower than other jobs. So it's amazing anybody goes into teaching at all. If they have all that education and maybe it's in computers or something, why would they choose a teaching job? They can get like 20, 30,000 more a year in like the computer industry itself directly. But to make up for that, well, if you stay with it.
The steps come in.
And then after 10 years, that $30,000 pay might be 60 or 65,000. And that's comparable then with what you could have got 10 years before, maybe going directly into industry. But at least there's a security there. Still, shouldn't we pay the best if we want the best people to be here for our kids? And our kids are the best, right? Don't we want to treat them that way?
Especially people with career changes that are retired and their expertise and want to go into teaching from being. That's a resource that's wonderful that's not being utilized.
Yeah, and well, part of that, for example, I retired in July from my full-time job here at the college, and I just saw someone in the cafeteria opposite the WHFR studios here in our student center, main campus, Henry Ford Community College, and he said, what, you're still around? You retired. And I said, well, I'm not going to get rid of me that easily. No, they're allowing me to stay part-time here.
You say, well, this is not work, this is fun.
But, yeah, well, that's true. Well, if I can share something and not too many people complain, that's fine with me. But the point is, I am limited until I turn 66 and how much I can earn each year. So, and of course, some people always feel as double-dipping. Okay, you retire, you get a pension, and then you want to get hired back full-time somewhere? That's just not right. But it's true that the retired population of this country is a tremendous resource, and I think they ought to remove it's something like $13,000 a year maximum before they're going to start taking away 50% of your pension if you earn more than that. And it's just not right.
If you're not 66.
If you're not 66 or whatever age. For the younger people younger than me, it might be 67 or older.
When it comes to it.
Yeah. So there are some things they could consider there because, especially with seniors, it's not a matter.
Well, they could afford to work for $30,000 a year into the regular contract.
Easily. If they've got the qualifications, they could be a good worker there. I want to say something, too. I don't know if I said it when I said that my dad was in the UAW. Let's go back to that for a second. That's hard work in the auto factories, folks. It's not like being a waitress, which is hard work often, too. Believe me, they're underpaid because they have no unions for that. But there's a lot of jobs that are not as hard as that. My dad was on the assembly line all his life. He had stress-related arthritis because of the things he had to lift and carry and the accidents that happened on the line. I worked at Ford Motor Company stamping plant in Woodhaven. It was only 8 weeks. Only 8 weeks, folks, when I was young and healthy in the 60s, before I got the job here at Henry Ford Community College. And I thought I was going to die. I mean, I had a rash all over me. I was hot and sweaty at the end of each day. And they actually have showers at Ford Woodhaven, the first auto plant in this area that put in showers for the workers so you didn't have to go home hot and sweaty. But it was hard work. I mean, guys at that plant then, they didn't have the safety standards maybe they have today because of the presses coming down that would stamp out the fenders and the doors almost, well, a couple times a week, not every day, people would go home without fingers, hands, in some cases, half their arm because, okay, they made a mistake and the big several ton piece of metal, the die came down, and they had their arm or hand or fingers in there. So there was accidents several times a week, and sometimes it wasn't the fault of the employee. So it's not safe work. It's not, although hopefully today it's safer than it was. It's not easy work. You do need special training, although they still call it semi-skilled. Okay, you don't need a college degree for most of the assembly jobs, but it's not easy work, folks. My dad, I think, killed himself, took 20 years off his life because of his work at Chrysler, and I'm glad I was able to survive 8 weeks at it. So, and teachers deserve every bit of pay that they can scrounge to. Okay, let's see if there's anything else going on here before we wrap up. You know, coming up in 2 minutes is the new is the end of the new WHFR Journal for today and the beginning of Highway 61 with Joanne Korchinska. We hope everyone out there is going to have a safe and happy holidays, of course. Ned, do you have a story you want to toss
in
the last
second? Yeah, we're talking about the issue of growing concerns at the borders, patrols, persistent targeting and ongoing detention of individuals at the border based on their race, ethnicity, religion, and a coalition of concerned advocacy agencies in Michigan announced the creation of a border complaint hotline today in honor of International Human Rights Day.
Today was a couple days ago, I think. The top of the page there when I printed it out.
Well, here's the telephone number if you got a complaint. 313-578-6832, or file a formal complaint online. So if you're going across the border and you tend to appear swarthier than the average person, be prepared to be questioned.
Do you have the website?
Address? Let's see. Not standing in front of me. You can get it from Access.
It's an email from Access. So just Google Access, A-C-C-E-S-S, the Arab Community Center for Education and Social Services. And they're forming a committee to try to, because believe it or not, folks, the profiling, if that's really what it is, of people that might be, I don't know, criminals, terrorists, or whatever, is still going on and it's still happening at the border. So if you had an incident that fits that situation for any discriminating reasons, not just how you look and the color of your skin, by all means make a complaint here locally through Access.
Just don't bring $10,000 or more across the border if you're in Windsor and you're coming home.
Right. So we are finishing up right now, and this is the end of the new WHFR Journal for today, December the 12th. Thank you, Ned Apigian, for coming in and being on the show today.
Always a great pleasure.
You did bring the sad news that Frank Bewick is back in the hospital. So, publisher emeritus, if you will, of the Dearborn Times-Herald. I guess he was out for a while. I know he had pneumonia.
4, 5, 6 weeks.
Well, so we do wish him well. Hope maybe he's listening to the show and got a laugh or two out of it. Always trying to do something funny. But he's a great newspaper person and a great opinion leader in the town. And we hope that he can have a speedy recovery. So this is all for now. And now, oh boy, it's time for Highway 61 and Joanne Korchinska. This is WHFR Dearborn. Highway 61.